Hi guys, and welcome to today's podcast, where I'm joined by Mr. Lou Hughes. So Lou, thank you very much for taking the time to join me on today's podcast. Obviously, you've got your own agency, Moving Minds, which you will have the link below when the podcast goes live. But there's more to you than just your standard digital marketing agency. And that's obviously what I want to talk to you about. You know, you have quite a unique overview on it, and obviously a very broad span, as we know, on digital marketing. So can you just give the audience a brief bit of your background and what that broad span actually involves?
Yeah, I'd be delighted to, Craig. Thank you first for having me, and I certainly appreciate everybody tuning in. My background really started in digital, at the very forefront. My first job, I was running internet marketing for a company called MedPartners, which is a Fortune 500 company, and this was in 1994. So we were, email had just been released and distributed for use. So ironically, as a young person growing up in early in my career, I felt like the digital moniker was a little bit of a slight, that I didn't have the offline experience that I had in digital. And of course, now the world has reversed, and digital is the primary means of reaching target customers and so forth. So it's interesting. But in my background also includes running internet and e-commerce operations and digital marketing for Caremark Rx, which is a huge pharmaceutical benefit management company here in the United States, for Fannie Mae, which is a Fortune 25 company in the mortgage space. And then a variety over the last 15 years in shifting less working for companies and more for myself and building our own agency. I've worked primarily for venture capital backed companies, private equity backed companies that are smaller, mid-cap size companies, to help them essentially launch a fully functioning marketing organization. And we do that generally on an outsourced basis.
It's interesting way to work, and I think that's what I really want to dig deeper into, is that whole outsource basis. And obviously for people like myself who started an agency years ago, one of the things I didn't do well, and which was a massive failure and massive amounts of stress, was I found myself deep under all of this work that needed done, trying to manage people in the office as well as trying to run a business, as well as trying to do the actual work. And for me, obviously, cleverly now, it's become more of an open conversation about scaling up and outsourcing and doing things more efficiently, having processes in place. Obviously, I failed in that respect. And I didn't know, so I see it's part of my learning curve. But I think one thing I want to emphasize is anyone starting out in an agency, this model that you do really is the one that I'm kicking myself over. Like, why did I not know this those years ago? Why wasn't I smart enough? Why did I want to hire local people when you can outsource a lot of that kind of stuff? So what are the kind of key steps? Because obviously you must have heard my story a million times, where managing people and not running the business efficiently, eventually it just becomes unscalable and a real stressful position. So what are the key things when, so obviously someone can hire you and scale this stuff out in a massive way, but what are the key components to outsourcing, in your opinion?
Well, I think there's the view from an agency owner, and then there's the view from a client perspective. As an agency owner, I think that is the challenge. I don't know that anyone's perfected. I certainly haven't, which is managing the client work and the quality of the client work, and handling, the operational and business and business development components. I think that's the struggle that we all face. Our business is very diverse. It's very complicated because it spans all of marketing's channels, which we now know have proliferated. There's 25 different means of communicating with clients or prospective customers, and each one of those has its unique specialties, right? It's a very specialized niche, SEO, for example, of course. And sort of assembling all of that intelligence and executing it in what we call concentrated force is very challenging. Generally, a VP of marketing will, or a CEO will be faced with, you know, the decision to either, you know, build a team internally or hire a team of freelancers or contractors or disparate agencies. And so our, you know, our approach is, problem with that model is you have sort of a redundant cost, meaning that you're building a an internal team of anywhere from maybe 5 to 7 people. Those people have very specific functional duties, you know, PR manager, a digital manager, a content marketing expert, and then they themselves are generally going to hire a firm to help them execute. You know, you've got the SEO company, you've got, even in just the digital space, Craig, you have, you know, a web design, web developer. Sometimes those two don't talk. You've got an SEO company, you know, on a managed retainer. They don't like the web designer and the developer, right? And then you've got the digital advertising piece. So just on digital alone, you've got 3 to 4, and then you've got a content marketing firm, right? Because none of those firms, they're so specialized that none of them generally talk to each other. And so you know, our value proposition is you've built an internal team, and then you've stacked a layer of functional agencies on top of that. So, you know, from our perspective, we try to get, you know, we call it getting to market faster and smarter, which is, you know, a lot of cases, a CEO wants to move quickly. They have a 3 to 5 year event horizon, which means they want to exit the company and return that equity back to their investors after an acquisition, presumably, if they are successful in growing a company. And so the fastest way to get to market, if you think about a CMO, they generally last about 23 months on average. And you know, SEO is a long-term play, right? You just don't implement. I mean, there are improvements that you can make quickly that will have an impact, but generally SEO is a long-term play, and you have to be patient. If you do it the right way, you'll have an excellent result, and you hire the right people. But what we have found is you know, you have a 6-month hiring process, then that person comes in and has to hire a team, and you're at 12 months into essentially what is the lifespan of a 3 to 5 year process. And the opportunity cost during that time in which you're recruiting and building that team is pretty significant if you're trying to grow 20 to 40% on an annual basis. So we try to solve that problem for companies, which is to bring a CMO level expertise and really the team that's required to execute fully integrated multi-channel programs, bring that to bear in what we call days, not months. And so we're able to deploy a team that can span across all of those different channels. And, you know, as an agency owner, you know, the challenge for us, frankly, is because we span all of the channels, it's complicated. And all of those parts are interdependent on each other. And I think that's where the failure is in a lot of companies, because those pieces generally are very functional and what we call silos. So the silos don't talk to each other, you know, generally, especially when they're competing for budget and they're disparate agencies, right? So you don't get that uniformity in terms of execution, the integration that you'd like. I mean, the ad copy in a digital advertising campaign, you know, might be different from what the website, you know, representation is. So we try to bring all of that together and simplify it. But I think the challenge for us as an agency is that because we don't specialize in a particular niche, just singularly focused, that is challenging to grow. Whereas if you're focused on SEO or you're focused on content marketing, I think that gives you a little bit of an advantage because you can productize your offering and it's more replicable over a period of time. Ours is a more custom, complicated, integrated model.
Yeah, well, I think what a lot of what you said just makes complete sense. You know, I've done it a million times, been fighting with the web designer or the developer. You know, they're going, no, we can't have content on there. We want it to look really nice, blah, 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 blah. But I think the key thing there is obviously fighting for budget. Again, I've been there fighting with the PPC guy who's saying, give me all the paid budget, to hell with SEO, blah, 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 blah. And it's like just a constant fight. But yeah, it makes sense to potentially hire you to then deal with that kind of squabbling, if you like, because it's rather childish, and there must be so much wasted time for someone trying to manage that in terms of, you know, a business owner or whatever. So it's a great option, I think, and I can relate to a lot of what you said there in terms of the squabbling with people and people not talking.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, you get the finger pointing, right? So everybody's, you know, pointing fingers and, you know, and frankly, the CMO or the, if there's an existing VP of marketing cobbling together this amalgamation of agencies and even the CEO, it's like, who do I believe, right? So, you know, the SEO company didn't put, you know, redirects in, the web developer didn't know that 301 redirects need to be implemented when you change, you know, URL structure. You know, and the site traffic gets trashed, you know, 50% over the course of 3 weeks. And I've been in a situation like that where people are pointing fingers and frankly, they don't know who to believe. And so, you know, and you can obfuscate, you know, you blame it on each other, right? And the client's at a disservice because they don't really know, you know, when you take your car in to get the you know, the, it's not performing well, right? And they tell you you need a new carburetor. You don't really know, you know, you got to trust them. So, we try to be agnostic. And I think we, because of my background being both digital and offline, we really try to take, and we're in a position where as a CMO, you have to allocate resources properly. You know, part of it's professional services, the resources, the intelligence and the talent that you have to be expert, to deploy an SEO program or content marketing or what have you. But the other part is just the paid spend, the advertising budget. And, you know, what are the right channels for me to deploy as a business owner or a venture capital company or whatever? What are the right channels for me to deploy the capital that I have? You know, and we try to, like I said, be agnostic to that. We don't really care how we get the growth so long as we get the growth. And we'll create a roadmap for deciding what are the right channels to obtain 20, 30, 40% growth year over year. And you have to, you know, and so we generally will own the budget for a client and we'll help navigate the allocation of resources. In a lot of cases, frankly, companies are not budgeted correctly. You know, you think about what it takes to deploy, you know, in the traditional way, right? 10, 15 years ago, you had four channels. You know, you had television, radio, print. Now you have 25. So it's, you know, if you've got the same amount of budget on a percentage basis of the company's revenue, whether that's 2%, 4%, 20%, you're distributing that over more channels, right? So you're diluting it. So the question is, at some point, what are, you know, you have to have a certain amount, anybody that's deployed digital advertising, you have to have enough sample size to determine whether, which is budget, right? Whether a campaign is actually working. When that's generally based on time, like 90 days, and it's based on a percentage or a, you know, a certain level of spend, right? So you can't, so what happens is you're starving the company of its potential growth by not budgeting appropriately. And I think that's the thing that I've encountered in my position, which is making sure that the company has enough oxygen to achieve the goals that the business owners, and the business owners are also the investors, the private equity managing directors, that they want to achieve. And I'll give you a great example. We had a client in January that we did a sort of a comprehensive marketing audit of their existing operations, their existing agencies and vendors, and then their operational capacity and capabilities, because that's so intertwined with your marketing function, right? And you know, they had $62 million in revenue. They wanted to grow at a 30% to 40% clip, and they had a $400,000 budget. You know, so you have to be realistic. You know, you're not going to grow at that percentage. And I don't think that people realize that marketing is expensive. It requires a minimum investment of, you know, 4 to 5%. And if you look at the companies that are generally growing year over year at a 50% clip, they're investing almost, and again, it depends on the industry. So in software as a service, you know, like Salesforce and other types of company in that space are, you know, spending anywhere from 26 to almost 49% of revenue. Now they have investors that are supportive of that, right? So if you think about Facebook not being profitable for so many years, up until, you know, they sort of flipped the model and turned on the switches, but they were investing in the growth, the acquisition of new customers to create market share. And so it depends on the industry, but even in industries like manufacturing, you know, you almost need an 8 to 11% budget to actually achieve, you know, anywhere from 20+% of growth. So I think that's the thing, you know, from my perspective, looking at marketing in totality, that we really try to work with clients to understand the commitment that's required, the investment that's required. And oftentimes what we see is an underfunding and an over expectation of what marketing can do based on those budgets. And I think that leads, Craig, to the reason why CMOs are, you know, are so easily discarded. They only last, you know, as I mentioned, 23 months. And, you know, that's not enough time. And if you're underfunded, you know, and the expectation is to have a certain level of growth, and you don't have the capacity to do that because you don't have the capital, the resources, whether it be talent or media or ad spend, you're sort of putting yourself out there for failure. And so we try to be realistic with companies to help them, you know, work back. You know, so we say, what is the rate of growth that you want to achieve? And then we backfill that. You know, we look at the key metrics that are important, you know, customer lifecycle value, cost per acquisition, you know, all types of different metrics to sort of back into what it is that's a realistic budget to achieve that particular growth, either in subscriber revenue, customers, patients, whatever it is. And oftentimes that's it's an interesting learning process. And, you know, we want to be successful, right? So it's important to make sure at the very outset of a relationship, you're prepared and capable for having success. And that creates a long-term relationship with a client.
Interesting. So I want to touch on, obviously, you mentioned a bit about offline advertising as well. And primarily, everyone that's ever come on my show has always spoken about online advertising. I'm just curious to know from your background, how effective or how important is offline marketing? As I know, we all know that you've got to pretty much do a bit of everything, as right. You say. But is offline marketing really still effective, TV and stuff like that? Or do you see that as a complete waste of money?
Well, that's a good question. You know, the biggest question that generally CEOs have and boards and, you know, it's like, how do you measure offline marketing investments? And I think great marketing is consistent and persistent across as many channels and saturate, right? You've got reach and frequency. And at a certain point, as I spoke to, you know, underfunding a budget, if you spread it out too thin, you're certainly not going to have success. None of the channels are going to work. So you've got to have concentrated force. You have to have enough budget in a particular channel for it to be successful. And instead of maybe dabbling in 25 channels, which include offline and online, you narrow that, you know, generally say, we're going to focus on these five channels that we feel like are going to help us drive success. There are ways of measuring offline ad spend, but it does require, like SEO, a longer term view, you know. So, and it depends on the type of company. So, you know, if you've got a small regional medical center in a community that has an older population, because those older populations have not necessarily completely migrated to digital, they're still picking up the newspaper out of their front yard. In that case, it makes a lot of sense to use a greater allocation towards print and offline. We use, you know, different tracking mechanisms to measure the performance of offline. We use, you know, call tracking software. CallRail is a phenomenal solution for being able to track inbound calls. Of course, we use analytics and look at correlation between an ad placement and traffic relative to a specific URL that we might use for a particular campaign. And there are other means of measuring. But yeah, I mean, it's an important part of the mix. But for some smaller entities, it may not be the right part of where they need to allocate the resources. It's dependent on the type of customer that they're going after, the size of their market. And digital, of course, has its advantages in terms of measurement and so forth. But yes, there are ways of measuring that. I think you have to take a longer term perspective with offline investment, doing television advertising. You know, one of the unknown secrets is that cable television and now YouTube offer a tremendously inexpensive mechanism for reaching people on a broadcast basis, meaning in a geo-targeted market, at a high level to build brand awareness and sort of sales readiness so that those people are softened for the funnel at the top of the funnel, right? But I think it's a very important part of it, but it's so dependent on the type of company and the industry and the geo market.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I was just curious because I don't do any typical offline, just being an SEO guy, but always curious to know if it's still effective, which of course I would imagine it is, depending on what type of business you are. Now, you mentioned that there's probably 25 channels where you could spread your budget to across the board. And for many businesses that are going to be listening to this, can't afford all 25 of those. So in your experience, on a relatively, because let's assume not everyone has millions of pounds to spend on marketing. So for the majority of the listeners out there, it's going to be small to medium-sized businesses. What would be the most effective channels if you were on a limited budget? I know you're going to, it's one of those ones, it really is impossible to answer. There's, you know, so many options, but if you were in a limited budget and you had to get a business off the, you know, just brand new business and try to market it properly and they had some decent money to do it, what would be your top three channels where you're seeing real good traction from?
Well, I think what we're doing here is probably the best, right? So, thought leadership, right? So gaining exposure for the business through the means of distribution. You know, content used to be distributed by high-end productions and videos that required a 30-person crew and cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to produce something. You know, now with media, as most people now know, you can be in your living room, which is where we are today, and share our perspective with the world. You know, so that's changed obviously, but I think thought leadership is tremendously important, and particularly with the less of an emphasis on online events. So Craig, you know this firsthand, right? So we're not able to have a giant event with 400 attendees in Glasgow or Palm Beach. So this is the best means to do that. It's certainly building, it's relationship based. So it doesn't cost anything, it costs time. And you have to have something smart and intelligent to share with people for them to tune in. So that's probably the best part. You know, SEO is still, I think probably the best investment over time, and link building, right? So how do you create exposure for your brand and your content? And there's some tools. SEMrush is a phenomenal tool for helping to facilitate that. That's something that we use. It depends on the type of company and sort of the growth targets, but, pay-per-click, keyword-based advertising, certainly level of immediate gratification, but it's extremely expensive. So again, it depends on, time horizons, expectations, budget. But now we have more capabilities than ever to be able to distribute messaging and a brand or even a personality that we didn't have before, of course, as everybody knows, but it is work, right? So it's, you have to dedicate part of your day to spending time with each other to do things like this, but it's critically important.
Yeah, no, I think there's a huge amount to be said for, doing the podcasting thing and any type of online event. And a lot of people say, oh, come on, man, it's a complete waste of time. It's garbage. It really isn't. It really is not. It's outrageous the amount of people you can get these things out to. So anyone who's sitting there thinking, geez, can I not just do more pay-per-click? You've got to expand over and above pay-per-click and SEO to an extent as well, and make sure that you're getting yourself out there. We call it
discoverability. Right. So, if you can't be found in first page of Google search results page, or if you can't, you're not visible, and we're guilty of this ourselves, we're an agency that markets our clients to the detriment of our own marketing. So, and that's a conundrum you see with all types of agencies, is dedicating the time to do that and treat yourself as a client. I saw an interesting post on Twitter last night, which was, and I'm going to probably butcher this, but it was about, you seeking to network with others But the perspective that you should have is creating an entity that people will want to come to you, right? So you pushing out reaches, you know, even on LinkedIn, like let's network, but you've got to create value. And with that value, you know, that serves as a magnet to pull people to you, to network with you rather than you doing the opposite of that. I don't know if that makes sense, but it was an interesting perspective. And I think it was dead on target.
Listen, I totally get it. I'm part of a UK group of digital marketers who we regularly have masterminds and stuff like that. So we'll go to a guy's office, but we're always looking for new people to come into that circle. But we're looking for someone who's offering value, who doesn't want to just come and sit and steal all of our golden nuggets. They've got to offer something of value. And then we'll say, right, that guy's talking a lot of sense. Let's get him up here. Let's have beers. Let's, you know, become friends with him and integrate him into our community. So I totally get what you mean, but they've got to offer that value first. It cannot be, you know, forced upon us. Like, loads of people would say, oh, can I come in? Absolutely not. Well, like, what are you bringing to the table is what the guys that organize that are going to be asking. What is this guy good at? What value is he bringing us? Or he's not coming. That is it. And that's the way to look at it. And I think a lot of people don't understand that concept. You've got to give a little to receive. And it's a weird way of working. But again, when I'm speaking at events and stuff, I always try and give more than the average speaker. Not for any other reason. I want to stand out from the crowd, but I want people to see value in what I'm doing as well. There's no point in just going through the motions. Networking's good or speaking's good or whatever. You've got to offer value. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah, it's a completely different mentality, which is, you know, you're used to as a consultant hiding that knowledge until you're hired and then you share that. But the world we live in requires sharing that knowledge to create credibility and trust and sort of the pulling effect towards you because you're an expert in their field. And that can be very contrarian to, you know, how consultants are trained, which is, you know, we sign a letter of engagement, then I'll share my knowledge with you. So I've struggled with that a little bit too. So there's a balance, you know, there's still some golden nuggets that you leave, you know, for that particular relationship or engagement. But yeah, sharing that knowledge that you have is obviously critically important because that's how you create the trust and credibility, you know, and it's critically important. And people get a sense of your thinking and whether you're the right fix or solution to the issues that they face.
Interesting. No, definitely an interesting point. And what I also want to touch on is obviously you manage the client's budget, so to speak. And I would just be curious to know, obviously I don't want to know the ins and outs of what you do and all that kind of stuff, but are there any tips? Because obviously you're still managing freelancers, you're still managing different people. One, how do you hone in on the best talent there is? And Two, how do you communicate with these people? You know, because obviously it can be messy from your side as well. So do you use a CRM? Mm-hmm. Are you using like Slack? You know, what kind of tools are you using to manage that whole process? Because I would imagine, you know, if Bob over there is doing some graphics and Jimmy over there is doing some link building, you're going to need something. And I'd just be curious to know, don't share it if you don't want to, but what your toolkit looks like. And As I say, most importantly, how you find the good guys, how you weed out the good guys from all the garbage that's out there.
Well, that's a really good question, and it's got a lot of levels to it. In terms of you know, we are different than a typical agency in a couple of ways. We were virtual when we started. You know, I live in Florida, so in the area that I lived in or we lived in, you know, there wasn't a lot of prolific marketing talent in that community. So it was hard for us to build a physical plant like a traditional agency in a New York City, for example. So 14 years ago, we decided, you know, we're going to build this virtually because the experts, you know, there's experts all over the world in different niches of marketing. And so we didn't want to be constrained by those personnel that was available in the market that we were in. So 14 years ago, we were the, you know, a virtual agency, combining talents from, you know, Europe and, you know, the West Coast, California, and we've assembled a team over that period of time, many of which I've worked for or worked with for, you know, 10 plus years. So there's a level of trust, and I know the level of competence that when we bring in someone to, you know, implement a CRM, or, you know, what I would call, if, you know, it makes more sense to bring in a fractional resource to set a system up, and then that person is redeployed to another client. It doesn't make sense to hire a CRM administrator full time for a lot of companies, right? So they only need them to set it up, to get Marketo functioning, for example, create the segmentation and the rules, and then that person sort of exits. So that's what we call the fractional model. It's more agile. It requires less headcount. CFOs prefer that because they've got less W-2s and less health benefits and the recruiting costs and training. So there's an advantage to being virtual and sort of fractional. And we built a stack for ourselves. We build, you know, the other part of that is that we, because of my view of marketing, you know, it's broad, but it's also deep. And the depth, it comes in the tool sets that companies use to scale marketing, right? You can't scale marketing without a foundation for growth. And that requires having the right systems in place, those systems being integrated and then being utilized properly. So I, you know, I have seen over my 10 plus years in this particular business as an agency owner, I can't tell you how many companies have bought solutions and haven't deployed them, or they haven't deployed them correctly. But we use a stack similar to what we would deploy for a client. So we've got a, we actually use Pipedrive for our CRM, which is a phenomenal tool. And, you know, I think it has advantages over Salesforce, who's the gorilla in that particular market space. They're adding functionality all of the time, which is remarkably innovative. And they're kind of coalescing a lot of capabilities into a single system. We use Apollo for our outbound marketing. So we're sort of attached, those two systems are attached. And then in terms of how we manage our team, we use Skype like crazy. Love Skype. I'm not a big fan of Slack, but I do work with some organizations that use Slack. But Skype is our go-to. That's how we instantaneously communicate with each other when we need a graphic or we need to post something. You know, there's a press release coming out. No, we haven't thought about the homepage or deploying a social media post about it. So that's how we quickly maneuver and execute different programs. And then we also use something called Basecamp. Basecamp is a project management solution. It's pretty well known. It's been around for a long time. And that's where we post, you know, project status, communications, the evolution of a graphic or a marketing campaign, because all the history is in that thread of communication with all of the people that are involved. And then for deploying integrated marketing programs, which is really essential, and I think that's what we do differently. We're not doing project work. We are actually executing consistent and persistent marketing programs for a client using these systems. So we use a system called Ryke, and we have found Ryke to be a phenomenal solution for integrating all of the marketing channels. You know, it's kind of like a dynamic Gantt chart, which allows you to map out each functional area of marketing and who's responsible for it. So it's sort of a hybrid or a better version of Basecamp. So you can manage all of your project, your revisions, your history, your project initiation, but it allows you to sequence the execution programs and to be able to sort of put them into a single point of view, which is essential for managing a complex marketing organization, because it's not a, you know, again, the challenge for CMOs and CEOs is, you know, what's my SEO firm doing? You know, what's my digital advertising firm doing? And they'll spend 4 hours a week meeting with each of those agencies. And so Ryke gives you the ability to integrate all of those activities in a single point of view, which we have found to be, you know, spectacular. It's a great tool. It's relatively inexpensive. It's not inexpensive, but it's reasonably inexpensive for what it provides. So those are some of the tools that we use.
I was just curious to know, because I think that's one of the things that people fall down on as well, is they're not using the right systems. And, you know, you say you talk on Skype to your team. I know guys that have messages coming from Facebook, Skype, WhatsApp, text, email, and it's just too many open lines of communication. It's just going to get a pretty bad mess. So I was just curious to know what your setup looked like. So great tools. I've heard of the majority of them. The last one you mentioned, I have never looked at, but I will be sure to look at that just for nosiness reasons. But I will list all of those tools you mentioned below as well, because I think, you know, Salesforce and everything else are really important to have if you're going to be working professionally. You've just got to have that system in place. But over and above everything else you've given away, Lou, you've given us a great detail of what you do, the systems you use, but have we not? Is there any other tips or information you want to share before we wrap up? Have we missed out on anything?
I don't know. I think we've covered it. I think, you know, the blending of, you know, marketing is complex. It's getting more complex every day. I think about marketing is that we're constantly learning. You know, there's so many solutions out there that are evolving and changing. It's remarkable, actually, how wonderful the subject of marketing is. I'm so glad that I chose that as a profession. It's a lot of, you know, when you pull a integrated campaign together and it deploys and it's successful and it grows revenue, and it's really rewarding. And, you know, I think back to, and I think also, you know, maybe some perspective I can share is, you know, trust your gut. You know, I remember running, I ran e-commerce for a large government integrator that was a competitor of CDW. And I'll never forget working tirelessly over the course of 6 months to build a new e-commerce site. And it was a markedly huge improvement over what we had before. And it, you know, we launched it, and for about a week or so, as people got used to the interface, you know, our existing customer base and those that were new, you know, it was a little scary because our sales went down, and it was like, oh my God, did we make the right decision? Did I put the search bar in the right place and the, you know, and different, you know, did the product descriptions perfect? And over time, within a couple of weeks, we started to see the numbers go up. So, you know, sort of jumping into the pool and taking a little bit of risk, but also, you know, knowing in your gut what the right things to do are, and feeling confident in that, even though in the short term, and SEO is a great example, because you don't have immediate gratification in some cases, but to, again, trust your gut and your knowledge and, you know, continue learning, you know, as we go forward. I think there's certainly a lot to learn about, and I'm learning every day, even though I've been in business for 30 years, I'm learning stuff every single day. So,
yeah, it's an ever-changing market. I want to just hone in on the message in my background. He who is not courageous enough to take risk will accomplish nothing in life, from Muhammad Ali. So I like a bit of risk taking or taking action, I think, is really important in this industry. And don't be scared to try stuff out and test stuff and grab the bull by the horns and see where it takes you. It's all part of the learning curve. But for anyone who is interested in what you've got to say or wants to reach out, where is the best place to contact you? Is it through the Moving Minds website, or can they find you somewhere else?
Well, you can certainly find me on LinkedIn. And you can also find us by visiting our website, which is movingminds.io. So that's probably the best place to reach us. And, you know, I'm happy to answer any questions that folks, either on the agency or freelancer side. And we're always looking for great talent too. You know, we're always blending the right tools. And as we see marketing evolve, you know, it requires adding new people with new talents to the team. And, you know, so if you're an agency owner or a freelancer or contractor, feel free to reach out to us. And certainly if you own a business, we'd be delighted to talk to you about how we can help, you know, grow that, you know, sort of change the trajectory. And a lot of companies, frankly, with the COVID situation, reduced their marketing organizations. They saw that, you know, in healthcare in particular, they paused elective procedures here in the United States. And that caused a lot of companies to sort of say, Mike, we want to carry that marketing, you know, on our payroll in 90 days when, frankly, we're not trying to drive volume. and people have downsized, unfortunately. It's affected a lot of marketing professionals here in the United States. And so we're, you know, an alternative to that. So we can help companies get back to where they were before and to sort of set the right roadmap heading into next year to achieve the growth that they want to achieve. So.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's been a rough year for sure. And hopefully we're nearing the end of this rough period, fingers crossed. But yeah, thank you very much for taking the time to come on, Luke. It has been an absolute pleasure. And as I say to everyone else, all of the links to Lou's website and his LinkedIn and the tools that Lou mentioned will be listed in the description below if you have an interest in looking at them or reaching out to Lou and potentially working with him. So, as I say, thank you very much, Lou. It has been an absolute pleasure.
Appreciate it. It's a pleasure of ours.